I'm back. Yours truly, the one and only Paul Pickett, host of the Paul Pickett Podcast, aka Triple P, aka the Common Sense Podcast. Your source for music, sports, politics, world events, and much, much more. Today, I'm going to react to a video titled "Find Out Why the Worst American President Ever Was So Loved." And I know you're probably thinking it's Donald Trump, but I seriously doubt it because Donald Trump was not the worst American president ever. I can think of probably a dozen guys that were worse than him. Before we get into it, though, let's give you a word from PromoPalace.biz.
Are you a musician looking for music marketing and promotion? Then look no further than PromoPalace LLC, your one-stop shop for all music promotion services. Services include Spotify playlist pitching, YouTube video promotion, record pool promotion, blog placements, radio airplay promotion, SoundCloud promotion, and much more.
With
over 2,000 customers and over 10 years of experience in online promotion, PromoPalace LLC is a company you can trust. For more info, please go to PromoPalace.biz. See you there.
You heard a beautiful lady. If you need online marketing promotions, check us out, PromoPalace.biz, one-stop shop to promote your music, product, brand, or service. All right, let's get into it. I don't even think I've watched this video. So, and these are the ones I prefer to, like, react to where I don't even know what's about to go on before I get into it. So let's get into it. I want to say this is a Thomas Sowell video.
Of the President of the United States delivering his State of the Union address earlier this year. Clip number one.
Higher education can't be a luxury.
Oh, Barack. He said, tell about Barack.
It is an economic imperative that every family in America should be able to afford.
Higher education, an imperative. All he's asking is that all young Americans should have the same opportunity to get a really good education that Tom Sowell had. Tom?
I love the way the use of the word opportunity. You know, I had as much opportunity to become an NBA star as Michael Jordan had. It just happens that there was some difference in skills. And so the same thing with education. There is no point trying to run people through institutions that they have very little interest in.
Thank you.
That they may not be suited for.
Thank you.
In fact, I would argue that one of the problems of American education is you have a lot of people in college who have no interest in what a college is supposed to be.
You know, let me stop right there. I had no interest in going to college. I had no interest in what they were trying to educate me in the high school. I'm interested in being educated in truth, but only what I want to be educated on. Like they pick and choose what they want to educate you on. And there was a lot of things that I just wasn't interested in school. And there was no college degree on how to break music, and there still is no college degree on how to break music, so that would have been a waste of college dollars. Let's keep it moving.
Nor is there any reason why they should.
And so the intellect, the
so you water down the education of the people who are there to get an education because of the people who are not there for that purpose and who are and who you're trying to appease in some way.
And he's right. There's so many people that go to college just for the college experience, just for the college parties and, you know, the frat parties, fraternity parties, sorority parties, whatever. They're just going because it's the cool thing to do. But it's not cool to go to college and come out a dummy.
Is the impulse that we just saw of Barack Obama and his supporters constantly more and more people run them through college, and that's what? That's to enhance the standing of intellectuals in society, to teach more and more Americans to defer to intellectuals? Is that part of what's going on?
It's to win votes, frankly. Oh.
Straightforward is that.
To win votes. Straightforward, yeah.
Once again.
I will not cede the wind or solar or battery industry to China or Germany because we refuse to make the same commitment here. We've subsidized oil companies for a century. That's long enough.
This is pre Solyndra, of course.
Yeah.
Tom?
You know, this notion of picking out something and calling it a good thing, like education or affordable housing or whatever it might be. Everything is a matter of trade-off. What did the band say there?
That he will not cede wind or solar or battery industry to China or Germany because we refuse to make the same commitment.
It's amazing that here is a man talking about five different industries, and none of which he has the slightest experience.
Thank you.
But because Thomas, he has these degrees from the places you mentioned, he thinks, and people have told him how clever he is, he now thinks that he can do this.
So can you
No human being on this planet could do this.
Can you explain, Tom, the particular appeal to intellectuals of the kind you describe here, of the green movement, of the environmental movement?
Oh, it shows them again in the role they relish. They're the wise and noble, forcing the rest of us poor dummies to do what's right, even though we don't want to.
I like that. They all think they're right and noble, forcing the rest of us poor dummies. Like, we don't know no better. Like, we can't think for ourselves. Like, we don't know that there's always been shifts and changes to the climate. What the hell you think an ice age was? You think that wasn't a climate change? And we've survived that. Let's keep it moving.
So it's what your old friend Karl Marx would have described as the will to power.
Yes.
All right. You don't want to cut them a little slight. That's, I mean, you're just saying it's ego and pride and vanity.
Yes.
Yes.
All right.
Yes. Thank you, Thomas.
The President of the United States.
Tax reform should follow the Buffett rule. If you make more than $1 million a year, you should not pay less than 30% in taxes. And my Republican friend Tom Coburn is right. Washington should stop subsidizing millionaires. In fact, if you're earning $1 million a year, you shouldn't get special tax subsidies or deductions. On the other hand, if you make under $250,000 a year, like 98% of American families, your taxes shouldn't go up.
All right, so all I'm seeing here is before Thomas Sowell gets into it, let's punish the people who have goals in life, who actually worked hard to be successful and try to build a business from ground up. And let's reward the non-successful, non-goaling having losers in society. That's all I'm hearing. Let's reward the non-goal having, non-ambitious, non-entrepreneurship achieving people. And let's punish the people who are trying to be successful, achieve goals, and working, you know, super hard at it. Because I could tell you right now, people that are starting businesses and trying to build a business from ground up are working 100 times harder than any fucking employee on the fucking planet. Let's keep it moving.
I love it.
Tom?
When people keep their own money, that's called subsidizing.
Wow,
them.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, thank you.
That's the brilliance of intellectuals.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I put 100% of the effort into building my business, but you take 30% of the fucking profit. I mean, I'm with Thomas Sowell on it. Just like, really, come on, man.
They can use words in such a malleable way that they can
sound
Obama has
intellectual
talent for saying things that make no sense. They not only sound plausible, but inspiring. You know, we're subsidizing the oil companies when they deduct the cost of doing business. You know, in order to arrive at the figure of how much net income they have, everybody does that.
Thank you.
So this notion, though, that if you're rich, you ought to pay more. Straightforward enough, no?
It is straightforward to us. It's also straightforward nonsense.
Thank you.
People don't, but they often speak of people who are rich as people who happen to have money.
Right.
Extremely few people happen to have money.
There aren't that
exactly.
many Rockefellers.
Well, but Rockefeller didn't happen to have money.
But his heirs happened to have it.
His heirs happened
right.
to have money.
So you're talking
about Rockefeller reduced the cost of oil to a fraction of what it had been before him, right. benefiting millions of people across the country. Therefore, they bought their oil from Rockefeller.
And that, before he finishes, that's why Rockefeller had a monopoly on oil, because of what he said right there.
Rockefeller, rather than from people who had more expensive ways of producing oil, for example, one of them being the use of tank cars on the railroads. The progressives were livid that Rockefeller could ship his oil at a cheaper price than the other producers. It never occurred to them that Rockefeller shipped his oil in tank cars, which are a hell of a lot cheaper to transport than in barrels. Right. I mean, we still measure oil in barrels today, but we ship it in tankers.
Right. Yeah, so they call Rockefeller this greedy, monopoly, hungry motherfucker, when he was just smarter than fucking everybody. He was thinking ahead of the curve. Well, you're going to punish people for thinking ahead of the curve. In all due respect, industry, world industry wouldn't be where it's today without Rockefellers, Vanderbilts, Carnegies, J.P. Morgans. I mean, these guys built industry from ground up. They revolutionized industry from ground up. And that's why America is the number one country in the world, because we freaking created industry from ground up. We took industry to a whole nother stratosphere. Let's keep going.
And that's how he became a multi-billionaire.
So we know from the study of economic history that wealthy people get wealthy by creating jobs, lowering prices of,
yes,
of products. Rather than Bill Gates, the richest man in America, one of the richest men in the world, invented an entire industry that, yes, simply didn't. All right, we know all that, and we also know, as we mentioned earlier, that cutting taxes worked to spur economic growth in the 20s. Again, under John Kennedy in the 60s, actually it was Johnson who ended up, most of the tax cuts took place, let's call it under the 60s, and then again in Ronald Reagan in the 1980s.
And then George W. Bush.
And George W. Bush. So how is it that he can stand there in the face of this overwhelming evidence and be taken seriously? I'm not asking now about Barack Obama as an intellectual.
He's got the gift of gab.
I'm asking about the people listening to him.
That's an act. He's a great actor.
You have people who don't stop and think. You've had dumbed down education. You've had propagandistic education. And people, what he's saying connects with all those kinds of things.
And
it goes the other way too. I was just doing some research on Detroit and its decline, and they kept raising the city income tax. And every time they raised the tax rate, the tax revenues went down. In 2008, Charles Gibson put this to Obama when he was a candidate. He said, why are you for raising the tax rate on the rich? Because you often get more revenue at lower tax rates than at the higher tax rates. And he said, well, it's a question of social justice. In other words, he doesn't really care about whether the government raises more revenues. If he can get people mad at the rich and they vote for him, then then it's a success.
You know what? That's what's crazy. It's a question about social justice. So, like they said, Bill Gates creates a whole nother industry, and we got to punish him for that. We got to super tax him. I mean, if he doesn't create that whole new industry, how many jobs will we not have? Like, when people create a whole new industry, they're creating new jobs. That's a great thing. That's great for the economy. So we got to punish them, though, because they're super rich. You know, you know what it sounds like to me? Let's punish the smart people who got their heads on right, who've accomplished things in life. And let's just punish the dumb motherfuckers who haven't even tried to achieve nothing in life, haven't even went forth, no goals. You know, it's like I said in one of my posts, it's called survival of the fittest, not support the non-fittest. It's called survival of the fittest, not support of the non-fittest. But let's hear the last little bit of this.
Just
I want to hear
Coleman,
finish this off.
Young's policies in Detroit were a great political success for him. Mm. It ruined Detroit, but it didn't.
I just have you and I happen to be reading on a similar subject. From 1950 to the present, two things happened. One was that the population of the United States of America roughly doubled, and the other was that the population of Detroit fell by roughly half.
Yes.
Unbelievable. All right. You write in Intellectuals in Society about the intellectual's view of diplomacy and military affairs. One last clip of the President of the United States.
Thank heaven I'm sitting down.
Look at Iran. Through the power of our diplomacy, a world that was once divided about how to deal with Iran's nuclear program now stands as one. The regime is more isolated than ever before. Its leaders are faced with crippling sanctions, And as long as they shirk their responsibilities, this pressure will not relent.
Tom, will you sleep better tonight having heard that?
I may take a sleeping pill so I can forget it.
Oh, shit. This man.
Diddle with Iran to the point where the military people are saying, you know, even if we decide to go in and bomb that place, they're so dispersed, so far underground, it's by no means clear that we can do it. The time when he was going through all this wonderful diplomacy he talks about was precisely the time when those things were put underground and dispersed. It's like when Hitler was arming, you know, that as Churchill said, at one point, a memorandum could have stopped Hitler. Mm. You know, because the power was so lopsidedly on the side of the Western democracies. It's like they could say, stop rearming or else. And we can't do that they diddled with Iran to the point where now we don't know.
Now, but there's something interesting about, to me, whereas with social policy, intellectuals tend to go for the policies mm-hmm. that give them greater power. What greater power could an intellectual seek than military power, the power to blow things up? So because
they believe that again that their intellect is the unique factor that is going to save us, and to say that there are a bunch of military people are going to be more effective than doing all these terribly clever things that Obama is doing undermines their whole position.
I see. All right.
Wow, that was interesting. And you know what? I actually did see this one before, so I should have known that. He was talking about Barack Obama. Most people would think that it's automatically going to be about Trump. I would argue William McKinley was probably the worst president ever because he was bought by Rockefeller, Carnegie, and Morgan and them cats, and then was assassinated the second term. And that's when my favorite president of all time, Theodore Roosevelt, basically came about. He was vice president and went behind William McKinley. And when William McKinley got assassinated, Theodore became president and instantly went after the monopolies. And if it wasn't for Theodore Roosevelt, oh, man, excuse me, to this day, I would not be self-employed. Got the burps coming in. Once again, I want to thank you for tuning in, Paul Pinker Podcast.